Resource Committee to order. Let the record reflect the time is 2:12 p.m. Today we have Representative, my friend Representative Wilson, Seaton, Tuck, Guttenberg, Edgman, and Olson, and myself, Newman. Representative Johnson, my co-chair, has been excused. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. Today we're going to hear House Bill 229, but I first start out with Representative Chenault's House Bill 229, titled Gas Exploration and Development Tax Credit. I want to make sure that, because we already had them listed for today's meeting, I've been noticed, but I want to read into the title again. House Bill 227 by Representative Herron, which is the Hulitna Basin Reserve, and House Bill 246 by Representative Newman, titled Sport Fish Guide Licenses. Just make sure that they're read into title, so if we have to bring them up for bills previously heard or noticed, that we've met those technicalities. Today we have, again, it's my intention to try and move forward on 229. We're going to see how we progress with 227 and 246 to continue on. First, we're going to hear from Representative Chenault, staff member Tom Wright. Tom, please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tom Wright, staff to Speaker Chenault. I really don't have much to add after the testimony and after some of the discussion we had. We have brought forward one amendment. This was in response to Representative Seaton's concerns, which, you know, we'd like the committee to consider. And I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have questions for Mr. Wright?
Also, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Carrie Lockhart, who is in charge of Alaska Marathon Operations, is also on teleconference, and I may defer to her expertise.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. And we also do have, again, Carrie Lockhart from Marathon Oil, Robin Wilson from the Tax Division, Kevin Banks, the Director of Division of Oil and Gas, and Marcia Davis from DOR, Department of Revenue, are online for questions. Representative Seaton, did you have a question?
I just didn't have the amendment, Mr. Chairman, but I just got it here. So.
Yeah, I believe we received several amendments here. Somewhat short notice, but we'll do our best to continue to try and work through them. We have an amendment that's I'm looking at here for version E, that's / E.5. Is that the amendment that you were referring to, Mr. Wright?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
I'd move this amendment for discussion. Is this our first amendment?
It's the first amendment today.
What? Is it number amendment number one?
Well, we'll call this, since we're labeled E-back or E.5, we'll call this amendment number five, just to try and make sure we stay as clear as we can. So we have amendment / E.5 offered by Representative Seaton, and it would be amendment number five. And I will object for discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I put it forward so we could discuss it, but I'm trying to review the amendment right now.
Mr. Wright, could you
explain? Mr. Chairman, what the amendment does two things. It eliminates Section 4. The language that was added at the end of Section 4 really isn't necessary, and so rather than try to confuse the point, it was, after discussions with Marcia Davis and discussions with Marathon, it was decided that Section 4 wasn't really necessary. And then the second portion, Mr. Chairman, that where we delete topping on page 4, lines 12 through 13, where we delete topping plants and processing units, this is more clarification than anything as what would be available for this tax credit and what would not be available for tax credit. And it's more clarification than anything in conformity with other statutes, Mr. Chairman. And that was at the advice of Marcia Davis from the Department of Revenue.
Tom, can you explain, or Marcia, maybe, can you explain your meanings on page, or lines 8 and 9 of the amendment, amendment number 5?
I apologize, Representative Newman. I do not have the copy of the amendment, but if you can tell me, is this the one that relates to the topping plant processing unit language change?
Yes, and for the record, this is Marcia Davis from the Department of Revenue speaking.
Yes, this is Marcia Davis, Department of Revenue.
Yes, Marcia, that's what, the one that we're talking about.
The first element, topping plants, was removed in part because it was incongruous with the idea that this was relating to gas development. A topping plant is essentially something that takes a crude oil stream and refines it, and you usually use those to make diesel, et cetera, so it didn't really have a place in this bill. And then processing units was such a broad, generic term, and I believe at the last hearing, one concern was raised as to whether this could include an LNG plant. And from a strict engineering standpoint, technically you probably could say an LNG plant is a processing unit. And so to address the concern that this stay within scope of what is essentially all of the processing that you would encounter in moving gas from the reservoir through the wellbore out into the lines, into the field, into the processing, up to the point of transport into commercial gas lines. What we recommended was using the already defined terms gas processing and gas treatment that are already defined in the tax code, which gas processing is essentially everything that happens from the wellbore down and up into through the field, the typical gas processing where you pull off, you know, gas liquids, NGLs, et cetera. And then the gas treatment is defined as something that's above the point of production, but is all the treatment that you do to a gas stream to remove CO2, to remove water, so that it is in a marketable condition and can be transported in gas lines. And then to be absolutely clear, the but excluding LNG or manufacturing plants was put in to bulletproof this language to ensure that people understood that an LNG plant or other manufacturing plant would not be included in the list of equipment that would qualify for this credit, because that is all downstream of gas treatment plants.
Ms. Davis, this is Representative Newman. Can you explain your terminology for a manufacturing plant, what that is, and why you felt it needed to be deleted?
We had this included to cover, say, for instance, agrium fertilizer plants. It's essentially where the molecular quality of the gas molecule is being modified to shape a product or shape it into another format. So manufacturing is essentially the process that starts to modify the molecule of the gas, and that is clearly something that is downstream of the whole gas development and gas processing system.
So those would be added value processing facilities?
Yes, Representative Newman, that would be another way of sort of characterizing it in the sense that you've done something additional to the gas other than produce it, process it, and prepare it for transport as gas.
Ms. Davis, if you were, I kind of get including LNG because of the requirements under AGEA and competition on that, but with the manufacturing, if you allow for exploration and development tax credits that are targeted towards manufacturing, wouldn't you take that to mean that it would enhance exploration so that we could try and enhance added value? Does that make sense?
If I understand your question or your proposition, Representative Newman, as I understand this bill is designed toward supporting and facilitating the gas discovery, the gas development, and the gas production. At this point, I understand that there are other bills in the House that are pending that are intended to encourage what you've characterized as the value-added process, where you then take the produced product, the delivered product, and then begin to value-add, do manufacturing processes, whether it's agrium, whether it's a GTL or some other processes that has a whole other mechanism and set of economic parameters. And I understand there are other bills that are designed and directed toward that part of the economic chain. Up to now, I've not seen that element in this bill. It certainly is in the prerogative of that body, the committee, if they want to broaden it and include it in that. It's not, that certainly wouldn't be my responsibility to make that call.
Okay, then. So, Ms. Davis, Representative Newman here. The discussion on other bills, well, we just don't know what happens to other bills, and they're not in front of us right now, so we've got to deal with what's in front of us because we don't know the fate of those other bills, and we're working on the fate of House Bill 229. With that said, would you object to amendment to the amendment to take manufacturing plants out of line 9, because I feel that it would be a great opportunity to try and spur incentives for exploration and also spur job creation opportunities in the state, because there's several things in the mix right now that could really benefit from that. Basically creating jobs. Would you object to removing manufacturing plants out of that? And by the way, for people listening online, these amendments are on basis currently now, so they are online
right.
And listed.
Okay. Representative Newman, who are you addressing that question to?
You.
Oh, okay. I'm not in a position to reflect the position of the administration on how they want to position the various bills for contribution. I think we're certainly here to help and facilitate whatever the will of the legislative body is. If the will of this legislative body were to include manufacturing, we would probably need to just make sure that we had contemplated that fact in our fiscal note and also go back and ensure that the tax provisions function appropriately, given that we would no longer be talking about a producer or with a focus on taxpayers that are producers, because conceivably and probably most likely anyone conducting manufacturing processes or value-added plants would tend to be third parties that are experts in those fields and not necessarily, and they would be in the position of buying the resource from producers at all that are the body of this bill currently.
Okay, that was a mouthful.
Yes, it was.
Of times, too, that, you know, manufacturing plants can be owned by producers or individuals. Representative Olson?
Just a point of clarification on the agrium plant and its predecessors. We had a situation for at least 20 years where the people that produced the gas were also the owners of the fertilizer plant.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I'd like to make an amendment to the amendment to remove manufacturing plants from line 9. Is there any objection?
I'll object.
Yes.
Objection. Seaton, I'll speak to your objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment is put forward to try and delineate where this production tax credit is going to stimulate production by putting in manufacturing plants, which are third-party plants generally. We are talking about a producer getting a tax credit for something that is happening in another by another entity, or even if it's by themselves. The purpose, I don't think it would be appropriate to give a tax credit, a production tax credit, on a manufacturing item, because that's downstream, that's removed, that could either be themselves or the other. And that's the same way with the other portions of this memo where it says design for field operations. And that is exactly the same thing, so that power plants, we are not talking about giving a credit for a producer of gas because somebody constructs a power plant and give them 25% tax credit on the on a power plant that is selling power to any one of the utilities instead of use in field operations. If it's used in field operations, that's understandable. That is a credit that is going, and that the electricity is used in the producing and the wells, and that legitimately works into the definition of property under qualified capital investment. When we get to either a power station selling electricity to someone else or to a manufacturing plant, then we have gone a long ways from a producing well. And so that's why I oppose the amendment to remove manufacturing plants.
And I'll just comment on that since I made the amendment to the amendment. You know, trying to make sure that we do what we can to get Alaska's clean gas to a lot of the electrical, you mentioned electrical generation facilities. I think it'd be a great thing to have a lot of the electrical generation facilities in rural Alaska running off of gas. To lower their costs, we look at what it costs our general fund revenue for power cost equalization. I mean, expanding opportunities to use these and the ownership, if you're worried about the credits. You know, I was talking to some folks from a producer yesterday, and they can't sell those credits. I mean, they're offered as low as 50 cents on a dollar. They just can't sell them. They're not available out there. And expanding opportunities to do that is what we need to be doing. Because right now, we're getting nothing, and nothing for nothing is nothing. So. Representative Guttenberg?
Ms. Davis said something to say. I'd be interested in hearing what she had to say.
Well, Representative Newman, I just wanted... Yes, this is Marcia Davis, Department of Revenue. I've had a chance to think about the comment and that Representative Newman has made, and no question, you know, it's entirely appropriate for this legislative body to find ways to encourage and enhance and incentivize value-added activities and industries in the state. The only thing that gives me pause is that if the intent were, in fact, to broaden this, to turn this into also an incentive for beyond what Representative Seaton, you know, I think correctly characterized as an upstream type of a credit, then I think more mechanically would have to be done to this bill. For instance, in Section 5 of the current Version E, you've got the definition of what is qualified capital investment, and that's the lead-in to this listing of equipment. And one of the premises is that this equipment needs to be used in the state for exploration and development of gas. And so that's why the focus has been on the field and what types of equipment and processes happen in the exploration and development phase of gas development. And the problem is that the manufacturing processes cannot in any way be considered part of the exploration and development. It's definitely post-production. So we'd have to change the language in that paragraph one in order for us to administer something like this.
Okay. Any other further comments? Yeah, the amendment. Yeah, there is an amendment to the amendment. It was objected by Representative Seaton to remove the words manufacturing plant from line 9 on amendment number 5, which is / E.5. So a yes vote is a vote to remove manufacturing plants. Clerk, call the roll.
Okay. Representative Guttenberg.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Tuck.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Edgemond.
No.
Co-Chair Johnson is absent. Co-Chair Newman.
Yes.
Two yay. Six nay.
The amendment to the amendment is failed. We were back to the original amendment. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I address a question to Marcia Davis?
Marcia Davis, please. Go ahead, Representative Seaton. You have a question for Marcia?
Thank you.
Marcia Davis from Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marcia, there's a, you know, the first two lines, one and two of this is through on page three, delete line 17 through 24, which is section four. And that's a taxpayer is not entitled to the credit in a section for expenditures made on qualified investment expenditures or qualified services made for exploration lying north of 68 degrees north latitude, or made to incurred to transport gas from reserves located north of there. If that section is removed, are we then granting this, what was essentially, I thought, a Cook Inlet provision to the entire state and the North Slope as well?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, it's my understanding that the proposal is not to delete Section 4, but rather in the amendment, which was previously contained in the bill, it was proposing to amend Section what was essentially 432043 subsection F by adding language. And it's my understanding of the amendment is that it's no longer going to purport to add language, so it no longer needs to be contained in a bill that would revise it. So at this point, because of the change or this proposed amendment, that F would be left alone and it would read as it currently reads, which contains the limitation that this income tax exemption or credit does not apply to North Slope gas.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
I'd like to propose an amendment to number five, and that would be to delete lines one and two on the amendment.
Object.
Would you like me to speak to the amendment?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was part of a larger topic, and deleting this material would mean that this removing Section 4, which is what those first two lines do, would mean that this would then apply to not just Cook Inlet, but would apply to the North Slope. And this amendment by the sponsor was specific, or this bill was specifically to relate to south of the North Slope. And so this would drastically, if lines one and two, that's on page three, deleting all that material in section four, it would mean that this would apply to the North Slope, which I don't think was the sponsor's intent, and it wasn't my intent when offering the amendment that that they had passed out and I hadn't seen before.
Mr. Chairman, I read that differently. I'm sorry.
Tom Wright, would you like to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tom Wright again. I'm reading that differently. It says a taxpayer is not entitled to a credit under this section made for exploration and development of a gas that occurred in the area of Alaska lying north of 68 degrees north latitude or that made or incurred for transport gas from reserves located in the area of Alaska lying north of 68 degrees. So I don't think the North Slope is included in this in the original language.
Chairman Newman, this is Marcia Davis.
Marcia Davis.
I would concur with Mr. Wright in that because the original bill, version E, on that page 3, lines 17 through 24, purport to amend 43F, by deleting that in its entirety, then what that means is version E does not amend the existing F, and it leaves F alone as it is now, which would, in fact, therefore, exclude the North Slope gas from the tax credit.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd withdraw amendment number two to amendment five.
Okay. Amendment, Representative Seaton's amendment to amendment number five has been withdrawn by Representative Seaton. Any other further discussion on amendment number five, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that the intent of the first two lines of the amendment number 5 was to delete all of Section 4 and not just what was added to e-version at the end there. Was the intent to go ahead and delete all of Section 4?
I believe, Representative Tuck, e-version is the working document. And so because it's the working document, if it removes on line 3, line 17 to 24, if you would like, I guess we can read that into the record. Mr. Wright.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Tom Wright for the record again. As Marcia stated, all we're doing is eliminating this section from the bill through the chair and Representative Tuck. We're not eliminating this section altogether, just from this bill. So 4320-43F still remains in place. But since we don't need the language on lines 22 through 24, there's no need to continue to have this section within the bill.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Wright. Thank you, Chair.
Any other discussion? Is there any objection to amendment number 5? Representative Guttenberg.
Yeah. I just want to point out, we're at the amendment, unamended.
Correct. There was an amendment offered to remove manufacturing plants that was defeated, and Representative Seaton offered an amendment to remove lines 1 and 2, which he removed. So we are on the original amendment as it was given to us. Is there any questions? Is there any objections to amendment number 5? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 5 passed. I removed my objection from that. So, okay, moving right along. We have another amendment by Representative Seaton. I believe that is E.6. And I would also like to mention that, you know, we've been through this several times about amendments and the need to have these amendments to the chairs. So, you know, we try and have a 24-hour rule on these so that committee members have a chance to take a look at them. It's very difficult to sit here and try and get an understanding of this, so that we and to have the opportunity to talk to the Department of Revenue, Division of Oil and Gas, Legal Services, on just what these amendments mean when we receive them right at the meeting time. And, you know, obviously we always have conceptual amendments as we work through a bill that makes them bigger. But when we have, you know, fairly substantial amendments, the chairs like to have these within 24 hours so that members of the committee have the ability to examine them and to see if this is what they like. And it puts us in a very difficult situation because a lot of times the makers of the amendment have spent a considerable amount of time on the amendment. They fully understand the repercussions or what it means or how it works, yet other members don't. And that's, we'll try and work through that. So again, and I've killed my own bill on this one and held it out because I had amended my own bill. So we're playing fair on this one. But Representative Seaton and other members, let's try and make sure that we've got amendments that we get them here 24 hours or we're not going to start taking them if they're substantial amendments. Representative Seaton, version /E.6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move number, you want to label this 6, huh?
We will make this number 6.
Object.
Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment, first of all, just so everybody understands, there were several things that were discussed at the last meeting. You notice that it's 3:23 is when we just received the amendment before we came here. So, what this does is it says that if someone is taking credits and they are doing a regulated facility and these credits come forward, then they wouldn't be used in any tariff or cost. That would be transmission, because we actually have transmission as one of the allowable property costs in here under page 4, line 11, as we were just talking about. And since transmission is there, we want to make sure that if they are taking this credit for a regulated facility, a regulated transmission line, which I don't think there will be many times the case, but if it was a regulated transmission line, then that would, the credit that the state puts into the line would not be go into the tariff base for a that the consumer would have to pay. So if the state is putting up money for a regulated line, just like we did with the GEO and the $500 million, that couldn't go into the tariff. And this would, or just like we might be looking at as far as a storage facility, every proposal I've heard said that we wouldn't allow those credits of a storage facility, which would be regulated, to be built into the tariff and collected from consumers. This does exactly the same thing, since we have this portion of the property that includes transmission lines.
Representative Seaton, are these transmission lines downstream?
That, Mr. Chairman, this would be downstream, probably.
I thought we just had a pretty thorough discussion on downstream and whether we were going to include them or not, if that was assumed to be exploration credit, which what this bill tries to go towards.
Representative Newman, this is Marcia Davis, if I could clarify.
Marcia Davis.
At the time the lines would be built and would be credits would be requested for the funding, the gathering lines and the transmission lines would be being built in connection with exploration and development. It would most likely at a later date, when other fields, adjacent fields, begin to be developed, that parties seeking better economics would seek to share transmission lines and share gathering lines and transmission lines, that arrangements would be made whereby someone's line that they have owned solely and invested in would seek to share those lines. And once they become used by other parties, that's the point in time that the regulatory commission would look in, and if the owner wants to designate it as a common carrier line at that juncture, they would come in and advise the RCA of what their historical building costs were, you know, what in order to construct tariff. And so at that later point in time, once you're beyond exploration and development, the state had already provided the credit, that is when we would ask at that future date they not include costs which were offset by the credit as being loaded into the base against which a tariff is derived. But at the time the credits are given and at the time that they're being built, they are part of the exploration and development.
Ms. Davis, I just want to clarify what you just said, that last sentence, that the gas, you led up to a whole lot of one sentence, I think, where the gas that's transferred through there would be the gas that this credit exploration applies to, but yet the rest of it would still be...
Well, the construction costs associated with building the gathering line and the transmission line, correct.
And a producer, not that I think that this might not be a good idea, but the, you know, does it fit into this bill and the discussion we just had, but you just talked about downstream costs and why we didn't, well, you didn't want them in there. So, Representative Guttenberg.
Still trying to digest what she said.
I think we all are.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
We have a line on the Kenai Peninsula, Kenai Kachemak, KKAPL line, which is a contract carrier, which is it's a sole owner. It's going to be soon a common carrier because they're negotiating with other companies, and then the RCA will regulate it and will put tariffs on that line. And so at a later date, after the exploration credits are applied, the question is, do you build in the cost that they didn't incur in that line? In other words, credits were given to them by the state, and the costs are built into the line, and now at a later date, if that becomes a common carrier, a regulated line, do they use the costs and take the state costs that we put into it and charge the customers for that amount of cost in the tariff? And all this says is that exactly the same thing as we're doing with AGEA and the other other kind of things where the state puts in the costs, that's not built into the tariff.
Representative Seaton, I just want to make sure I'm clear with this too. So because this is an exploration and development incentive tax credit, it's meant for exploration and development, that now we want to start adding in pipelines that are downstream to be able to get credits for those. And you'd mentioned that we've got a sole owner pipeline that's not a common carrier that may become a common carrier that we may want to include these here. And that's why things like this, you know, I really like to have these a little bit of time beforehand. We could add maybe RCA talk about this and how this affects things in depth. I just made mine to maintain my objection. It's just, I don't understand it. Representative Guttenberg.
So for clarity, what we're saying here is they can't use that foot of pipe that they've got a credit for on building their rate. Is that each foot that they've used? Is that what you're talking about?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, no, it isn't the total cost that they can't load in. It's just the amount of costs that have been offset by the credit.
Right.
So it's the amount of the tax credit they received that can't be loaded into the rate base. So for instance, if this credit is 25%, then if the pipe cost $1 million, you know, all the different parts of the pipe cost $1 million, they can include $750,000 in the rate base, but because they receive $250,000 as a tax credit, that won't be included. So when the consumer finds out what their tariff is, it'll be based against a $750,000 cost pipe and not against a $1 million cost pipe.
Representative Wilson, did you have a follow-up?
No.
And Ms. Davis, when you make comments, please, or anybody that we're talking to off-net, if you would please identify yourself first. I think the clerk recognizes your voice, but other people who are listening may not.
Yes, sir.
Representative Wilson.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I understand what you're saying, Marcia, is that this bill or this amendment is just saying that if the owner has already gotten a credit for it, in order to keep the price down for anyone else that wants to take advantage of it, he can't add in the amount that he already got the credit for.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Wright, for the record again. I think as Marcia explained, this amendment is not really necessary because they already cannot do that. You know, once they've got their tax credit, you know, they aren't going to be able to charge that off, you know, at a later time. You know, they have to go with whatever the credit amount is, so we don't believe this amendment's necessary.
Thank you. And Representative Seaton and Wilson, and I'll ask if anybody fully understands this, but I don't. Representative Seaton and then Wilson.
Sure, and Mr. Chairman, when someone is building a line, and this is a gas line using for their use, they can take the tax credit. They get the tax credit. The question is, if they then later use this line for a common carrier and it's regulated and they go to the RCA, can they submit the cost of the pipe line, or do they have to exclude the amount that the state paid, the state's percentage in there? And that's all this says, is that they may not include in the rate base. And we were very specific in AGEA that they couldn't use our $500 million in applying for the rate base to FERC. We've made that consistently, whether we're talking about storage or anything else, that if we give a tax credit for a regulated entity, that it can't go into the rate base. So I think that this is for clarity so that we don't in the future get into a problem.
And Chairman Newman, this is Marcia Davis with Department of Revenue. I agree with Representative Seaton that it is language that's contained in the Alaska Gasoline Inducement Act. It's also language that's contained in, I believe, House Bill 280, which relates to gas storage, where money can get paid to offset the cost of gas storage. But in the event the gas storage becomes regulated, it has exactly this language in that bill. And so in terms of its inclusion here, it doesn't violate sort of what's been done previously in other bills. However, I do not know how the RCA would address a situation where a facility owner received income tax credits and whether they are or are not allowed to reflect those in their filings for the cost of the equipment for which they're seeking to set a tariff. So I'm not an expert at the RCA, so I really can't say one way or the other.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Marcia, are you saying that this probably would be an okay amendment to the bill?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, yes, I would say that this would not do any harm. It would create clarity. Whether, as Mr. Wright said, it's absolutely necessary, I don't know the answer to that, but it doesn't do any harm, and it is consistent with an existing piece of statute and a proposed bill.
And just to comment, it may be consistent with other pieces of legislation. This is a new bill. And I just don't get it. And it's still downstream, and we just had that discussion. So I'm going to maintain my objection. It's just, and if anybody fully understands this one, please let me know. Clerk, call the roll.
Okay, so the roll call vote on Amendment 6. Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson is absent. Co-Chair Newman?
No.
6 yay, 2 nay.
Representative Seaton, I think you have another amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
And this is getting, Representative Seaton, it's getting kind of confusing. And we really need to have these beforehand. And I don't know how long you've been working on them, but not good procedure. And we'll try and work through this. We have the documents here about the 24-hour rule, but we'll try and work through this one. But I'm really having difficulty with major amendments like this because we don't have the people here to talk about them.
On that point?
Representative Wilson.
I had people in my office until probably 9 o'clock last night. I'll probably have people in my office at least that late tonight. Yeah, it would be helpful to get this stuff out. I know in other committees, if it's not in within 24 hours, and I believe the chair will vouch for me, I've held up my own bills. I've held up the chair's bills for not having amendments in 24 hours. It's difficult for us, especially this time of year if we don't have adequate time to read it. How many more do you have? You don't mind me asking.
This is the final bill. These were the questions that I raised in the previous hearing, and these are the what Ledge Legal has drafted. We could have done them as conceptual amendments in the previous hearing because that's when it was originally brought up. These are the Ledge Legal drafts, Mr. Chairman.
And I believe we had an objection by Representative Olson on this.
Yep.
You know, I don't know what last statute 43-55-25 is and these different statutes here. Here's where we're at.
Yeah.
Representative Olson allowed us a little bit of extra time because he moved labor and commerce down a little bit. If we can get through this here in short order, and if all members feel that they completely understand the ramifications of this, we'll think about, consider doing a vote on this, but I'm having some really difficult times with this one because I don't think we're getting a good understanding of what we're doing here. So, Representative Seaton, can you...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move, I presume you want to label this number 7?
This would be number 7 in a version /E.7, and we have an objection by Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent of this is so that if a credit is given on this, these exploration credits, just like they are across the rest of the state, that the data shall be available to the Department of Natural Resources. That's the data on the well data. And I would like to offer an amendment to the amendment. And if you'll see on the first page, it simply adds before 3, it adds before applying the credit against the tax liability under this chapter.
So you are amending your amendment?
That's correct.
To add what again?
You see on the first page there where it says legal services, where it's underlined in bold, before applying the credit against the tax liability under this chapter.
Where?
Just in front of the 3.
Right.
Okay. 3 on in the amendment.
Just for people who are trying to desperately follow along here, there was a memo from Legal Services dated March 24th from Don Bullock to Representative Seaton. I believe discussing this amendment, and I think he's, Representative Seaton is offering amendment to the Legal Services memo.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment that was requested from Legal Services was to have it so that the information would be submitted before one took a tax credit. The way it came back, the on 323, well, it didn't come back on 323. These both came back just before I came down here. But the 3, that's the E.7 left it unclear that if it was even a expense that could be allowable for a tax credit, you would have to submit your data. And there was no intention for me of saying, if somebody does some work, the state gets the information. It's only if you apply for a tax credit and the state is paying money for that, then the state receives something for the credit for which they apply. And this is done in almost on all our other credits, in exploration and development credits. And the reason is because we're putting a fair amount of money into that exploration, and if it's a dry hole or anything else, what we do is we get back the we at least gain something for giving that tax credit, which is the data from that hole. So this is just clarifying that it's not because something you're doing would clarify under the capital credits, but if you actually apply for and get a capital credit.
Representative Wilson and everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that you should put make that a conceptual amendment, because if it goes in right after the number 3, it doesn't make sense. So I think we better make it a conceptual amendment, because it would read, before applying the credit against a tax liability under this chapter, shall submit to the Department of Natural Resources. It doesn't make sense.
Tom?
I'd make that conceptual.
So I don't know if we've got a conceptual amendment to the amendment. Is that what we have now?
Yes.
Can you repeat that? So we have a conceptual amendment to the amendment, and I believe Representative Seaton already offered an amendment to a Legal Services thing, so we're trying to get this straight here, folks. That's why we want some notice here. So I believe we are working just on amendment number 7, and Representative Wilson has an amendment to the amendment. Is that correct, Representative Wilson?
No. I just pointed out to him it didn't make quite sense, so he should make his amendment to the amendment conceptual.
Representative Seaton, would you like to offer a conceptual amendment to amendment number 7, your amendment?
I would, Mr. Chairman, and that is to, after 3 and before the word shall, insert.
What line are we on?
We are on line, on page 1, line 15, after 3 and before shall, it would read, and conceptually, before applying the credit against the tax liability under this chapter.
Is everybody clear on the amendment to the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment to the amendment? Representative Seaton's amendment to his amendment number 7, adding the words before applying the credit against the tax liability under the chapter on line 15 after the words 3 and before the word shall. I see no objection. So that amendment to the amendment passes. We're back to the original amendment. Mr. Wright.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm going to put it this way. If this amendment's adopted, this bill might as well stay in this committee. The data that is required to be submitted in this is expensive to obtain. It costs, is proprietary. And quite frankly, this is a non-starter for us, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson, we have been joined by Representative Johnson for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure a lot of people will be glad to hear I'm losing my voice and not feeling well, but I came in, I've been listening to this, and this is a deal killer. The information, what we're trying to do here is incentivize people to go out and do work and explore, and this is a very competitive business. We've heard about the number of people that want to come into this market, that want to come into this area and explore, and if what they have to do to get state's help is to open their books and tell their competitors everything that they're going to be doing, everything they've already done, all their data, I can't agree more with the sponsor's representative saying this is a deal killer. I think if we go down this path, this could be the beginning of the end. So I'm strongly opposed to us forcing private companies divulging their information without confidentiality. And there's maybe there isn't, but I don't see it in this particular language that says that this isn't throwing the information open to everyone who wants to see it. And I strongly disagree with this amendment. And with that, I'll probably go back and not infect anyone else.
Representative Wilson, Olson, Tuck.
Because I don't understand what these other statutes are, could I ask Marcia to comment? Because I agree, we don't want to mess up things. So could Marcia make some comments on how that it's required in other ways, and is that going to make businesses not want to do this? I don't know.
That's certainly hypothetical, but Marcia Davis, if you want to take a chance.
Yes. Chairman Newman, this is Marcia Davis with Department of Revenue. I can tell you what the statutory reference is. It is to the exploration incentive credit part of the production tax law, and it's only to a specific part of the exploration incentive credit. What it's referencing by limiting it to the reference to 2F2, it leaves out the reference to F1, which requires sort of a form for DNR to be filled in. It also leaves out a reference in the earlier part of the section to how the producer must approach DNR and give them advance opportunity to say whether the exploration activity is good or bad or whatever. So it's left out all the pre-contact with DNR. By referencing F2, it is now referencing only the notification to DNR after the completion of the seismic or geophysical data processing or completion of the well. And it's requiring, and section F2 describes the type of data
that is to be provided to natural resources, and that is essentially data sets, what's called ancillary data and reports on the exploration. And so it's a limited reference, and so I can tell you that's what the data is and that's what the requirement would be. It doesn't have any pre-authorization or pre-approval from DNR. I cannot speak with reference to sort of how companies do or don't react to giving data. I can say that in Cook Inlet, it's a little bit different than North Slope because there's just a lot more companies bumping up to each other, elbow to elbow, you probably would need to have the company speak to you about how they view the competitive nature of their data. Under this rule, this 25F2 provides that when DNR gets the data, they are to hold it confidential for 10 years. And so, again, companies would have their own individual perspective on whether holding their data confidential for 10 years is sufficient or not.
Marcia Davis, this is Representative Newman. Is it standard policy for the Department of Revenue to offer your opinions on amendments and legislation?
For Department of Natural Resources or Department of Revenue?
I'm talking to you.
I'm not giving an opinion on this, sir.
Oh, I thought that's what we just heard. We had pre-approval.
I was describing how Section 25F2 operates, and I thought it was very clear to say that individual companies have their own respective reactions to this as to whether they like or don't like it, and I was saying that I cannot speak to that because that's the purview of individual companies, and I don't have that information.
I thought you were speaking for the department. Representative Olson?
Well, to be maintaining my objection, but one of the reasons the companies probably don't have it is because we just had it dropped on us 15 minutes ago. I doubt if possibly a couple of the people in the room may have had an opportunity to see this amendment or the previous two, but I'd like to know what the intent of the co-chairs is on the rest of the session. Are we going to allow amendments to come in within 24 hours, or are we going to hold to the terms of the...
Representative Olson, I tried to allow for some flexibility here. We're trying to get to the end of the session. We got some bills backed up, but substantial amendments like this, again, you asked, and my answer is no. We will not be accepting substantial amendments like this. And conceptual amendments, we work through the bill. Substantial ones like this, if they don't have it, within 24 hours, so we've got time to be able to talk to legal experts, to talk to people who are involved in this, we will not accept them.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I speak for my co-chair.
He can't talk.
He's shaking his head yes.
I believe that, Mr. Co-chair, I believe that we had the same language written in a bill that we just passed on the floor today, House Bill 280. I remember reading this language before. I think it was just recently. I guess that's a question for Marcia Davis to see if she recognizes this language and if indeed it was in House Bill 280, which had to do with gas storage, and then the second half of that, gas exploration and development and given tax credits for that. But was this language written in there? Do you know, Marcia?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, I don't recall that. I know that it's in the current statute for the ACES credits for the exploration incentive credit, but I do not know if it's in 280.
Any other further discussion on amendment? Representative Edgman?
Yeah, I'm still struggling to get an understanding of this. I've heard from, the bill sponsor staff and the co-chair that this is a deal killer, but what I'm hearing from at least the Department of Revenue, that it's maybe not as, the tents aren't as serious. So I'm trying to get a sense of is there, which side is right, and am I hearing things correctly from the department?
Representative, we're not saying, this is Marcia Davis, we're not saying about the industry.
Okay, Marcia Davis. Marcia, let's make sure we recognize people first, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then we won't have people interrupting Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we have Kerry Lockhart from Marathon Oil online. Maybe we could just ask. And maybe they will tell us. Is this
Johnson
a deal killer or not, Kerry?
Mr. Chairman? Kerry Lockhart, are you available?
Yes, I am. This is Kerry Lockhart with Marathon, and thank you for asking. Yes, this is a deal killer. Let me tell you why. When we go out and do any kind of work, and let's take it for an example in the NASIC field, if we want to do further development to tap into New Horizons, we've already spent literally millions of dollars in highly proprietary, confidential geophysical data that we've spent money on, not only acquiring the data, but analyzing it, interpreting it, and processing it. And to give that away gives us great heartburn, and to make it even worse is this data will make it into the public domain, which is an absolute non-starter for us.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going back to what Marcia said, and one thing that she did say that made perfect sense to me that I would vote no on this amendment is because it is a little bit different in the Cook Inlet because there's so many different ones that are stacked right next to each other that they wouldn't want each other knowing any of this type of stuff. And so because of that, it makes sense to me. And so because of that, I'd be voting against this amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to call a question.
Wilson. And then, yes, I did just ask the Chair of Labor and Commerce. We're done, not knocking into his time, so trying to make sure we're clear on that one. And discussion on that. So, clerk, please call the roll on amendment number 7.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
I have a question for Ms. Lockhart.
We have had a call. Representative Johnson, do you want to remove your call, or do we want to, we need to vote on
I'll
the call?
I'll remove my call, but briefly, because I see this as quickly becoming dilatory.
Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I said something in this committee once before, and I was told I was being offensive. This is a complex bill, complex amendment, and I don't appreciate that that comment either. So, for Ms. Lockhart, if I may. The 10-year proprietary that the department keeps and that this amendment is proposing to do, is that something usual? Do you consider 10 years too long or too short for this information, or do you take tax credits and other things with similar provisions?
This is Carrie Lockhart, Representative Guttenberg, through the chair. I would view 10 years as being entirely too short, given the life of our fields that we operate in. And I believe Representative Wilson was alluding to the fact there are multiple players in Cook Inlet that are near and around us. And we do know that there are people, which we call corner shooters, that do try to encroach in our operations. And this data, this highly confidential, highly expensive data, only gives them, fuel to impede into our operations that is not at all desirable. So, 10 years is not near long enough, given the entire life of these fields sometimes is 50 years.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just in wrap-up, this isn't requiring a company to give data to us. We're buying data. We're paying 25% of the total cost of the of this, and so if it goes forward and then it's all just proprietary data and we never have access to that. We've got a number of units that have had some exploration and then they have withdrawn or left, and if we don't have the information, then we have we really haven't gained what we should have. This is exactly the same provision that we have in ACES and exploratory credits. We're increasing these credits, the value of these credits, over 2.5 times the value, from 10% to 25%. And so it seems that the state is actually paying for something and it should receive something in return, especially if there's dry holes, et cetera. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, this is Carrie Lockhart. Can I comment on that?
30 seconds, Carrie, and we've had a call for the vote. We need to keep moving. Carrie?
Okay. I will state that, that the data is expansive underneath that provision, so it wouldn't just include the logs you get out of that well. It would include other data sets that we have paid for well in advance of anything that we'd be doing in the future underneath this tax credit.
Thank you. Clerk, call the roll.
So that I'm clear, this is on Amendment 7, then?
Clerk, call the roll on Amendment Number 7, which is /E.7, offered by Representative Seaton, objected by Representative Olson. A yes vote is for the amendment, a no vote is against the amendment. Clerk, call the roll.
Okay. Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Newman?
No.
Four yay, five nay.
Amendment Number 7 fails. Community discussion. Hearing and seeing none, what is the will of the committee? Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House Bill Number 229, amended with individual recommendations and fiscal notes, out of committee.
Object.
With fiscal note?
With fiscal notes. And
we do have an objection by Representative Kawasaki to movement of the bill. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Pass.
Representative Edgman?
Pass.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Co-chair Johnson?
Yes.
Co-chair Newman?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Back to Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Back to Representative Edman?
Yes.
So eight yay, one nay.
House Bill 229, version /E, has passed from committee as amended with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. Thank you. We will adjourn, and I ask members to please stay here.